And when Gideon perceived that it was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God, because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face." And the Lord said unto him, "Peace be unto thee. Fear not. You're not going to die." Gideon built an altar there unto Jehovah, which is actually something God said not to do in the law. But he just felt overwhelmed and felt that that was the right thing to do at that place, and called it, "Jehovah is our peace. Jehovah is peace." And unto this day it is in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. It came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, "Take your father's young bullock, the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath. Cut it down, and cut down the grove that is by it." Any of you ever been walking in some old forest? It's very, very peaceful around trees that are several hundred years old, huge, bent, very peaceful. Apparently, that became a worship center where groves were planted, and they became old trees over the centuries. That's where they had their high places many times. And they had a grove around this altar of Baal that Gideon's father had. How many times in the law did God say not to do that? He said, "Don't plant any grove near my altar to start with," because of the connection, hanging baskets, those little wind chimes that swing in the breeze. That's to drive off demons. That's where it came from. They'd be swinging in the breeze, hanging baskets of flowers with the altar, usually up on a hill, but sometimes, well, down in groves, down along beautiful spots, along creeks, wherever a god was thought to especially inhabit. And Gideon's father had one. So Gideon got some of his father's servants together. They hooked up, must have been a pretty big altar, I mean, pretty big idol. Hooked up the ox to it and pulled it over. Chopped down this is working at night, because he was afraid. Working at night, chopped up all the grove, built a fire, killed the ox and offered him on that, and then went and hid, this mighty man of valor. He hadn't found out yet how brave he was. And in the morning, the people woke up and their sacred grove and that wonderful, beautiful thing that belonged to Baal was knocked over. How could anybody do such a beautiful work of art like that? So they ask around, and you know, the servants always knew everything. So they found out that it was Gideon, and they came to, what was his father's house? Name? What was his father's name?
Joaz.
And demanded that Gideon pay the price for the desecration of that holy place. And when the men of the city demanded in verse 30 that he bring out his son to die because he cast down the altar of Baal, because he hath cut down the grove that was by it, Joash said, "Are you going to plead for Baal? You're going to save Baal? He that will plead for Baal, let him be put to death while it's still this morning. If he's a god, let him plead for himself because somebody cast down his altar. Let Baal get him. If Baal's a god, let him handle it." Therefore, his name became Jerubbaal, one that contends with Baal, or one Baal contends with. Let Baal plead against him because he's thrown down his altar. Well, then the Spirit of the Lord came on Gideon. He blew a trumpet and got some men from the tribes of, in verse 35, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali. Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali were up in the north. His hometown was somewhere up in here. So he just got the tribes closest to where his hometown was to go to fight with him. He also called some from Manasseh, his tribe. And Gideon said unto God, "If you're really going to save Israel by your hand, as you've said, I'll put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if dew be on the fleece only, and it's dry upon all the earth around it, I'll know you're going to save Israel by my hand, as you said." And it was so. For he rose up early in the morning, and thrust the fleece together and wring the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, Oh, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this one more time. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with my fleece. Let it be dry only upon the fleece, and dew everywhere else. And God did so that night. It was dry upon the fleece, and there was dew on all the ground. And Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Harod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, You have too many people with you. Now, they were already vastly outnumbered. But God has requirements for those who are going to be in His army. Number one is that you can't be chicken. He tells Gideon to go throughout this 32,000 man army you've got here and tell them, whoever's afraid, go home. And he did. He walked throughout the camp, sent messengers, and said, whoever's fearful, let him go home. You're going to make everybody else afraid. 22,000 men decided they'd be better off at home. So he had 10,000 left. Now Gideon's faith was really going to be tried. And God asked him after that, or told him after that, he said, You still got too many. If you all win with a good-sized army, you're not going to give me the credit. So take them all down to the creek down there and watch and tell them to go get something to drink and watch and see how they do it. If they get down on all fours and just get their face down in the water, tell them to set them over here. And if they bend down on one knee and reach down with their hand and lap it like a dog, still holding their weapon in their hand and still watching, then he set them over there. 9,700 stuck their faces down in the water. And Gideon and God told Gideon, tell them they need to be home too. So now he had 300 to face this vast multitude of Midianites and Amalekites. Now Gideon wanted to ask God for another sign, but he had already told God that was his last one. But God, being tenderhearted, told him, Gideon, this is after Gideon at nighttime got up on the hills around with his 300 men, got up on the hills around. Gideon, if you still need something, sneak down to the Midianite camp and I'll let them talk you into fighting. So he did. He and his servant Phurah sneaked down at night close to a tent, and he heard two Midianites talking. And one of them said, I had a dream of a huge barley cake rolling down this hill mountain and smashing all our tents up. And the other one said, You know what that is? That's Gideon. He's going to destroy us. And Gideon and Phurah looked at each other. I said, I guess we got to do it. So they went back up there, and the plan worked. There was so much confusion in the night that the Midianites and the Amalekites clashing against each other started fighting each other. The rest fled away, and Gideon chased many of them and killed them. And some of them were escaping, and Gideon in verse 24 sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim. This is on down farther south, because some of them were trying to escape that way. So he sent messengers to Ephraim to catch those Midianites trying to escape across the Jordan River, and told them to take the fords. In verse 25, those Ephraimites took two of the princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, and they killed them both and brought their heads to Gideon. And the men of Ephraim were upset with Gideon and said, Why didn't you call us when you went to fight with the Midianites? And they really were getting on him. And he said, Hold on now. Look what you've got. You've got the two princes. You got the best of the whole lot of them. What is anything I've done compared to what you've done? Then after he flattered them, they were satisfied. Gideon decided to go on and chase the rest of them across Jordan. And he came with 300 men that were with him. They were very tired, yet they were pursuing, hot on their heels, and he came to Succoth. You know where Succoth is? It's on the Jabbok River. He crossed over and came to Succoth, and he asked the men of Succoth, give us some water or bread or something. We're chasing these oppressors of Israel. And they said, I don't know. What if you get up there and get beaten up, and we've given you help, then they come back and get us? They said, they're not in your hands yet. I think we better just stay inside our city. Verse 7, Gideon said, therefore, when Jehovah has delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will come back here and tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. He went on up the Jabbok River till he came to Penuel. What was something notable that happened at Penuel, Lou?
Jacob's name changed.
Jacob wrestled an angel and his name was changed to Israel at Penuel. It's a pretty well-known city. Came to Penuel and spoke to them of Penuel the same way. Give us some help. And the men of Penuel answered him the same way the men of Succoth did. Verse 9, he spoke to the men of Penuel, saying, when I come again in peace, I'm going to break down this tower. Then he went on out there and chased Zeba and Zalmunna into the wilderness. He slew a huge amount of huge number of the enemy. In verse 12, he caught them. On his way back, in verse 14, he caught a young man of Succoth and inquired of him. And he told him who were the leaders of the city. So Gideon went and took the men of the city. In verse 16, he took the elders of the city, all 70 of them, and taught the men of Succoth with thorns and briars. What do you think he taught them, Wendell? Yeah, I know. What was the lesson? Be on the Lord's side. Have faith in God. And then he went and beat down the tower of Penuel and killed all the men of that city. Boy, he was angry, wasn't he? And then he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, what manner of men were they whom you killed at Mount Tabor? And they answered, they looked like you. They resembled the children of a king. And he said, they were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As Jehovah lives, if you had saved them alive, I would not slay you. And he said to Jether, his firstborn, up, kill them. But the young man drew not his sword, for he was afraid. He was a youth. And Zeba and Zalmunna said, you get up and fall on us. As a man is, so is his strength. So Gideon rose up and killed him. Took away the ornaments that were on their camel's neck. Next thing you know, Israel's asking for a king. This is a bad thing because God is their king. And every time Israel needs help, God, and they turn to God, he's helped them. But now they want to be like other nations and have a king. That way they don't have to seek God when they get in trouble, they think. They just always have a king there and go to him. The men of Israel said to Gideon, you rule over us, you and your son's son forever. You delivered us from Midian. Gideon said, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. And Gideon said to them, well, there's one thing you can give me. Give me, every man, the earrings that you got in this war. Because they had a lot of golden earrings. They said, we will willingly give them. They spread a garment, and they throw in there every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and beside the chains that was about their camel's neck. And Gideon made an ephod, that's against the law of God, and put it in his city, even in Ophrah, and all Israel thither went a-whoring after it. Now they came worshiping it, the golden ephod of Gideon. You remember that brass serpent that Moses made in the wilderness many hundred years before this? Israel was worshiping that brass serpent at this time too. They worshiped it until 1 Kings 18. So, why would they do things like that? They didn't know any better. The men of God were not doing their part. Weren't doing their job. So Midian was subdued before the children of Israel so that they lifted up their heads no more. That is against Israel. Country was in quietness 40 years in the days of Gibeon. Gideon had, verse 30, had 70 sons and one other one from a concubine in Shechem named Abimelech. Gideon died, and what's Israel do after a judge dies? Sins. What does God do after Israel sins? Yep. Verse 34, the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side, neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, Gideon, according to all the goodness that he had showed to Israel. Well, Abimelech, this son of Gideon's concubine, apparently thought his father had made a tragic mistake by not accepting Israel's offer to be their king. So he decided he would manipulate, pull some political strings, see if he couldn't build his way up to the throne. So he went to the men of Shechem, where his mother, Gideon's concubine, came from, and he said, "Now look, you want all those 70 sons of Gideon over you?" Because everybody apparently was still looking up to him. "Or is it better that just one man rule over you? And remember, my mother's from this city. Some of you I'm kin to." And they thought it over and they thought, "It's better just for one man to rule over us." Now this is God's way of making sure they don't make a king. So he got his men together and they collected all of Gideon's sons. One, the baby boy, escaped. And took them on one rock. Didn't it say he cut off all their heads? Can you imagine being about number 37 in line? What an awful day. Blood running all over everywhere. So Abimelech is left alone. Now, that one son of Joash yelled at Abimelech. One son of Gideon named Joash yelled from the top of the hill and uttered a curse on Abimelech from the Lord that was fulfilled in the, later on in this chapter. Now I want you to look at something here. Verse 22. When Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel, then the devil sent an evil spirit. God sent an evil spirit. And who is that evil spirit going to stir up trouble between? Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. Now, there follows this civil war. And as the story proceeds, Abimelech has some success. Some people go up into this high tower to protect themselves from him. The men and women of a city, and children too, I suppose. He went and cut down huge limbs, laid it around that tower, set it on fire, and burned them all up alive. And he thought he really must have enjoyed that. Because in the very next battle, he was presented with the same problem. He came up with the same solution. "Okay, everybody cut limbs, let's go." And he went up close to the edge of the city wall. And a woman up there had a chunk of millstone. And she saw him down there, and she just threw it, and it came down right on his head. And he knew he was going to die. He told his armor bearer, "Quick, stab me, so nobody say a woman killed me." But a woman killed him. His armor bearer stabbed him and finished him off, but that didn't count. That was cheating. And that's an important story because David mentions it later. So you need to remember the story of Abimelech and how he was killed. He was killed because he foolishly, in a war, went right up under the wall of people he was about to burn alive, thinking they weren't going to try to resist him. I mean, it's real stupid if you see people up there and, "Oh, I'm going to burn you alive," and you just carry stuff and you start building a fire at the bottom and expect them to just stand up there and look at you and say, "Oh, poor us. Oh, woe is me. I am about to be burned alive." Boo hoo. That's not how people think. They think, what can I do to kill this man that's going to burn me alive? I will throw a rock on his head. And she did. So remember the story of Abimelech. Chapter 10 tells about a few other judges. And when the judge dies, Israel sins. God punishes. Israel repents. God raises up another judge. Israel does okay a little while. Does better while the judge is alive. Then a judge dies. Goes around again. Israel was sore distressed. And in verse 10, this is one other time later when they repented. The children of Israel cried unto the Lord, saying, we have sinned against thee, both because we have forsaken our God and served Baals, plural, Baalim. And the Lord said unto the children of Israel, did not I deliver you from the Egyptians? I'm the one that did that. From the Amorites, from the children of Ammon, from the Philistines, the Zidonians, the Amalekites, the Maonites, who did oppress you. And every time you cried out to me, I delivered you out of their hands. Yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. Wherefore, I will deliver you no more. Go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you. Just remind, God has the heart of a mother and a father. This reminds me of my mother. She was a nurse. Give you an example. She was a nurse. So when I had to go through allergy treatment, she gave me shots at home, you know, once a week or two or three times a week, whatever it was. And some days she just was happy-go-lucky, and I could tell the shot was going to hurt. I knew by the look on her face whether that shot was going to hurt that day or not. If she, oh, hell. Well, some days I hardly felt it. She was calm and collected. She came in this one day happy-go-lucky and she grabbed the needle, and I said, not today. I'm never going to give you another shot. She told you that? She told you about that?
No. She told me I'm never going to give you another shot.
Oh, she told you too. She told us both she wasn't going to give us any more shots. Of course, she gave me one the next day when she was calmed down. Because she couldn't catch me the day she was real excited. Sure she did. God's doing that with Israel. He's just so hurt. Because it's a whole lot more serious than giving a shot. But God's brokenhearted here. He's told him, how many times I've delivered you, how many times I've raised up a judge, and every time I do you good, as soon as the problem's solved, you go back doing bad again and leave me. He said, I'm just not going to deliver you anymore. You go ask those gods that you love so much. Ask them to deliver you from these other people. And the children of Israel said unto the Lord, we have sinned. Do thou unto us whatsoever seems good unto you. Deliver us only, and we'll pray. We pray you, please, this day. And they put away the strange gods from among them and served the Lord. And his heart was touched. He's got the heart of a mother. He was grieved for the misery of Israel. In chapter 11 it says, this is God bringing some more deliverance. Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty man of valor, but he was a son of a harlot. Gilead begat Jephthah, and Gilead's wife bare him other sons, and his wife's sons grew up and threw Jephthah out of the house. They said, you're not going to inherit in our father's house. You're the son of a strange woman. So, here's Gilead. That's where Jephthah's from. And his brothers, his half-brothers, threw him out of the house. They threw him out of the house until there was a problem. When these Ammonites over here decided that they didn't like Israel having this territory. And so they began to march up that way and send messengers to Gilead's house. Jephthah, by the way, wasn't he cast out over here to Tob or somewhere out in the wilderness? They sent the Ammonites send messengers up here to the Gileadites and say, get out of our land. Go away. That's our land, and you all took it. Well, what did they do? They wondered, who can help us? Who's a mighty man of valor? And one of them said, well, Jephthah was a pretty tough guy. So they sent men to Jephthah and said, come help us. The Ammonites are attacking. And Jephthah said, you throw me out of my father's house. Tell me I'm unfit to even be a part of your family. And then the Ammonites attack, and you ask me to help. Let me see if I can figure this out. So he sends a messenger back to them and says, if you make me your ruler forever, permanently, the head of my father's house, I might, under the right circumstances, come fight for you. And they agree in a hurry because they know they're no match for the Ammonites. So here comes Gilead. Here comes Jephthah. Coming back to fight. And his first thing he does is send a message to the king of Ammon. I love this message he sent, because his message is a summary of Moses' conquest of this land. What did God tell Moses about the territory of the Ammonites? Not to take one inch of it. He said, I've given this territory to the Ammonites, and I've given this territory to the Moabites. Don't take one foot breadth of their land. But this territory from the Arora, from the Arnon River, northward to the Jabbok River, whose territory was that? Not when Moses got there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sihon. Not the Ammonites. Amorites. Sihon, king of the Amorites. So Ammon never did own this territory. Before this time, Moab was up here. But the Amorites had come across and driven him down below the river, Arnon. So the Amorites were here. Israel never took one inch of land from the Ammonites. Lot's son with Moab. So Israel had this territory all the way from this river on up. Jephthah writes all this down, sends it back to the king of Ammon. And he concludes by saying, the land that our God gives to us, we take, and the land that your God gives you, you take. Our God has given us this land, and actually, Jephthah's God had given them that land, but he said, your God gave you your land, our God gave us ours, let's just be happy neighbors. Of course, that leads to a war. Before he goes out to war, Jephthah promises God, if you bring me back home in peace, I'll offer as a burnt offering whatever comes out to meet me from my house, whether it's a goat. Mentally, he was thinking animal. So he goes off, wins the battle, comes home, and his daughter runs out to greet him. And all his excitement, all the thrill of everybody comes to a screeching halt because he thinks he's obligated now to cut his daughter's throat and offer her as a burnt sacrifice. Why does he think this? Because he doesn't know the law, because God's men have not done their job. It never entered into God's heart to offer your child as a sacrifice to him. He said, oh, honey, you have brought me low. I've opened my mouth to the Lord and I can't change it. Well, he didn't open his mouth to God promising to offer his daughter. If he had been wise, he would have understood his promise to God to mean only the kinds of sacrifices God accepts. Not anything. And she said, well, whatever you said to God, do it. But just give me a little while to grieve, because I never was able to marry before you do it to me. What a horrible story. So After a little while of grieving, she comes home. His father cuts her throat and burns her on an altar. And that's horrible. God did not approve of that. He kept his word as much as he could understand it. But he ended up doing something that hurt God again. And himself. I mean, imagine the pain he went through thinking he was obligated to do something like that. That's the story of Jephthah. Chapter 11, verse 26 says what? I assume he's referring to when Israel took the land. That seems like a long time. You add up all the dates of these judges, it sure stretches out for much more time than what we can account for later. So I really don't know unless he got confused or some kind of problem there why he would say 300 years. Well, let's just assume that. There's a scripture in Acts somewhere about how many years the judges were. Paul's talking in one of his sermons. Can't remember where it is now. Maybe look it up. It gives us how many years that God worked with judges. Now, that's a lot of time. Some time passed. We know that. It's hard to figure out how these judges could have been consecutive.
John,
Well, it could be.
Because he said, why didn't God give it back to you?
Yeah.
Why didn't he claim the part of Oreb? It could have been back to when they had first took away from him.
But you see, the Amorites, Jimmy's saying maybe that 300 years goes back to the time when the Amorites came over from Canaan and drove these people out, but they didn't take it from the Ammonites even then. They took it from Moab. That's why up here at Shittim, wherever it is, it's called the Plains of Moab, not the Plains of Ammon, because Moab used to be in this territory. So the Ammonites' claim for this land never did hold water. But there's a possibility he could have been referring back in unknown history, however far it goes back when the Amorites came across. But even when they came across, as I say, they didn't take it from the Ammonites. So that was an unjust claim all the way around. After the judge dies, judges die that are told about at the end of chapter 12. Chapter 13, the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines. Travis, where did the Philistines live? Don't hurt yourself. Yeah, down in the southern part of Canaan. Thank you, sir. Down along the sea coast, southern part of Canaan. What tribes touched on the Philistine territory, Kathy?
Judah.
Judah did?
Yeah, well, Simeon's in there.
Simeon scattered, yeah.
And then I would say also Dan.
I was hoping you would also say Dan.
And that should
just about do it. Dan and Judah. I think so. The next judge is going to be from the tribe of Dan. What's his name, Cliff?
Samson.
Here's how the story of Samson begins. The angel of the Lord appeared to the wife of a man named Manoah. In verse 3. And the angel came to her and said, "You are barren. You haven't had any children. Now, please do not drink any wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing, because you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, because he's going to be a Nazarite." Nazarite was a person from any of the tribes of Israel, other than Levi, as far as we know, who was devoted to God, set apart for God. He's going to be a Nazarite from the time he's born, an instrument of God. And he's going to begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines.
And the woman came and told her husband and said, "A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel, very terrible countenance. But I didn't ask him where he was from, and he didn't tell me his name, but he told me I was going to have a child, and he was going to have to be a Nazarite from the time he was born." And Manoah asked Jehovah in verse 8, "Send that man of God back again. I want to see him so he can teach us what to do." And God listened in verse 9. And the angel came into the woman as she sat in the field, and Manoah wasn't with her. And the woman made haste and ran and told her husband and said, "The same man is out there that appeared to me the other day." Manoah rose, went after his wife, and came to the man and said, "Are you the man that spoke unto the woman?" And he said, "I am." And Manoah said, "Now let thy words come to pass. How shall we order the child? What shall we do?" And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, "Everything I said to the woman, let her be careful to do. She may not eat of anything that comes of the vine, neither let her drink wine or any strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing, even while she's carrying him. Make her observe everything I commanded her." And Manoah said to the angel, "I pray thee, let us detain thee until we have made ready a kid for thee." And the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, "Well, you can detain me, but I will not eat. If you want to offer a burnt offering, you must offer that to the Lord, not to me." That's what he means. "For Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto the angel, 'What is your name, that when thy sayings do come to pass, we may do thee honor?'" You know what they'd have done to honor him? There would have been an idol, an altar, or something in his name. And the angel of the Lord said unto him, "Why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is secret?" You know that Jesus has promised every one of us in Revelation 2:17 that if we're saved in the end, he's going to give every person in that new world a new name. And that name's going to be on a stone, and no one will be able to know what your name is but you. All God's angels have secret names. And other names that they'll use every once in a while. Now, I don't know why God wants us to have secret names. It's kind of like a passport on your computer, I guess. But it's promised. A name that no one knows but you. And this angel said, "My name is secret. Don't ask me that." Manoah made the kid and a meat offering and offered it upon a rock unto the Lord. And the angel did wondrously. Now, what do you think was wondrously? Why? What would cause a person to write down that that angel did wondrously? I mean, that's separate. Afterward, it came a flame, verse 20, from off the altar and consumed it. You know, one time Jesus did wondrously, and his disciples marveled. As they were walking down the road, they were walking behind him. He was walking in front. And Jesus did something that they all marveled at. And they had already seen miracles of dead raised and body parts put on and everything. He was doing something different. You reckon he was dancing in the spirit? They would have wondered about that. He could have been. The angel did wondrously. What would cause them to do wondrously? What would cause somebody to write that what he did was wondrous? You know what wondrous really means? It means it makes you wonder what's going on. Something they didn't know about. Something they'd never experienced. Something they couldn't explain. That's what this angel did. And that's what Jesus did one time, walking down the road in front of his disciples. They marveled at him. In heaven, they have a good time. And sometimes if they show up on earth, they get feeling good, they have a good time anyway. And then when they do, people say they do wondrously. And they marvel. Oh boy, they felt... And the angel, in verse 20, ascended up into heaven in the flame of the altar, and Manoah and his wife looked on it and fell on their faces to the ground. But the angel of the Lord did no more appear to Manoah and his wife. Then Manoah knew he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto his wife, "We shall surely die because we've seen God." And that shows you why the angel came to the woman to start with. She said, "He told us we were going to have a baby. You ain't going to die." "You can't die yet." Yeah, he was thinking. He shouldn't have been thinking.
Baby, I would die.
But his wife said, "If the Lord were pleased to kill us, he wouldn't have received a burnt offering and a meat offering or showed us all these things." And then the woman had her son, named him Samson. And the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move on him. Samson went down when he grew up some, in verse chapter 14, he went down to Timnath, a lot of Philistines around, and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. He came up and told his father and his mother and said, "I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, give me her for my wife." His father and his mother said, "Is there never a woman among God's people that will satisfy you? That you have to go down to these uncircumcised Philistines and get a woman that's worshiping a different God?" And he replied very bluntly, "Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well." Father and his mother didn't know that it was of God. Now, it was not of God to marry Philistines, but it was of God to use Samson's weakness to destroy the Philistines, begin to deliver Israel from them. It did not please God that Samson was more interested in a woman that knew nothing about God than he was with those who belonged to God. So they started making the arrangements because Samson insisted. Samson went down, his father, mother, to Timnath, came to the vineyards, and a young lion attacked him. And Samson killed the lion with his own hands as if he was killing a little kid of the goats. Now, his father and his mother were somewhere else at the time, and he didn't even tell them what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. And after a time, he returned to take her for his wife, and he decided he'd go see what happened to that lion. And there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took some of the honey out of the lion with his hands. Now, you reckon those bees said, "Oh, there comes Samson. We won't sting him." Samson was a tough guy. You see bears up in trees getting honey and the bees swarming them, trying to sting them, can't get through the fur. Well, Samson wasn't covered with fur. And those bees do not take kindly to people taking their honey. But it didn't bother him. This was a tough man. He walked on down the road eating the honey, having a good time. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion, it says. And came to his father and mother and said, "Hey, I've got some honey here. You want some?" "Hey, yes." And they ate. He didn't tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So his father went down unto the woman, and Samson made a feast, for that was the custom of the time. And it came to pass when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson put forth unto them a riddle and said, "If you can answer my riddle, I'll give you, each one of you, all 30 of you, new clothes, a new set of clothes." And clothes were very important at that time. I've told you that before. Poor people didn't have clothes. They had rags or sacks or whatever that scraps they could find. But he said, "If you don't answer my riddle, each one of you give me a new set of clothes." He figured he'd be a rich man, 30 sets of clothes. Who would have that? And so he put forth his riddle, and they agreed to the deal. They made the debt, the wager. Verse 14, he said, "Out of the eater came forth meat, and out of the strong came forth sweetness." And they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. Well, they figured they were getting desperate because they didn't want to pay their part of the bargain. That's a bad feeling when somebody makes a bet with you and they lose, they won't pay up. And they were afraid they were going to have to pay up. They didn't want to do that. So they came to the woman that Samson was going to marry. And they said, "We would like your help. we'll make a deal with you. You find out what his riddle means, and we won't burn you and your father alive with your house. Is that a deal? So she thought about it for about 1 second. And when the next time she saw Samson, she started asking him, "You don't love me?" "What do you mean, honey? You haven't told me what your riddle means." "Why haven't you told my parents what my riddle means? I haven't told anybody." "You're not going to marry them." Well, she submarined him.
Target lock. Missiles fire.
Verse 17. She wept before him the 7 days while their feast lasted. And it came to pass on the seventh day that he told her, because he couldn't stand it anymore. "Oh, now I know you love me. Go for a walk. I got to go now." She got Samson out of the way, sent him to the bread store or something. Went straight to those 30 companions and said, "Well, I found out." So here comes the big day. Samson's coming to the last day of the feast where he's going to marry the woman and get his 30 new pairs of suits. And oh, he's so excited. And they said, "Well, we've done a lot of thinking about this, Samson. I mean, this was a good one, buddy. He almost got us. But suddenly we had this revelation. It just this morning, as a matter of fact, while you were at the bread store. Suddenly, Ralph over here said, "Well, what's stronger than a lion?" And Fred said, "Well, what's sweeter than honey?" So, there you have it. Honey out of a lion, old buddy. Deal's a deal. Samson said, "You plowed with my heifer." Well, then Samson knew he had to pay up because he'd been submarined. So he went out and killed 30 Philistines and took their clothes and brought them back. And it doesn't even say he washed them. And then he got so mad he walked away. He just left. He was so mad at her. And when he left, the girl's father said, "Well, he's gone. Would you like to marry this woman?" So he gave her away to somebody else. Meanwhile, Samson's down home and Dan pouting. And he gets over in a few weeks and says, "Well, she was a nice girl. I think I will go back and take her after all." So he comes back to his father-in-law's house, potential father-in-law, and says, okay, I'll forgive her. Where is she?" He said, I thought you had dumped her. I gave her to her friend. Ralph took her. Now, this does not sit well with Samson at all. So he decides, verse 3, chapter 15, "Samson said concerning them, 'Now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do a displeasure.'" He went and caught 300 foxes, took firebrands, and turned tail to tail, put a firebrand in the midst between two tails. Now, if you are a fox whose tail is tied to another fox, and both of your tails are on fire, what are you going to do? They ran through the cornfields of the Philistines, and the whole countryside was ablaze, with foxes screaming, and fires, and servants, and hollering, and they don't know if it's the end of the world or what, and they find out it's Samson. Verse 6, then the Philistines said, "Who has done this?" They said, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and gave her to Samson's friend, and they came and burned her and her father up with fire." When you become involved with an unbeliever, any child of God who does that, they put that unbeliever in a very dangerous position. And it's just the mercy of God as many survive as they do. Because God is jealous over His people. Poor girl. Poor man. Samson was still hot. Not as hot as the girl and her father. But he was still hot. Samson said, "Though you have done this, yet..." Now Samson said, "You burned up my wife. You Philistines. I will yet be avenged of you. And after that, I'll stop." And he killed a bunch of them. And then he went and dwelt on top of a little hill, rock, whatever it was, the rock Etam. The Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. Now the people of Judah were nervous because the Philistines were ruling over them. And they said, "What's the problem?" They said, "We came for Samson." They said, "Well, let us handle this." So 3,000 men of Judah go up to Samson in the rock. And he said, "What are you here for?" They said, "All we came to do, Samson, buddy, is just tie you up and turn you over to Philistines. That's all." And Samson said, "Well, I'll tell you what. I'll let you do it on one condition. That you promise me you won't hurt me. Just turn me over to them." That's all he wanted, was to be turned over to the Philistines. And they said, okay. So they tied him up, brought him down to the Philistines, and the Spirit of God came on him. He burst their ropes and he killed how many of them? 1,000 of them? 1,000 of them. With the jawbone of a donkey that he found lying around. Chapter 16. He judged Israel over a period of 20 years. Who knows what else he did? Samson had a problem with lusting after women who knew how to make men lust after them. The next thing he did in chapter 16 was get involved with a harlot down in Gaza. One night when he was there with her, the Philistines started gathering around, and Samson made his escape and went to the gate of the city. And the gate of the city, which was usually taller than this, it would be taller than this wall and huge. I mean, tree trunks basically made out a lot of the gate. Took some effort to get them open and closed. Samson ran to the gate. They had him locked in. But Samson was kind of like that 1,300-pound gorilla. You know, where does a 1,300-pound gorilla sit when he comes to your house? And the answer is anywhere he wants to. Samson was kind of like that. The gate didn't stop him. The Spirit of God came on him, and he took the gate and jerked it off the wall of the city, put it on his shoulder, and carried it 40 miles to Hebron. Now, I don't know if somebody at Hebron needed a gate. I don't know why he carried it 40 miles to Hebron. Maybe they chased him 39 miles. I don't know. There's no man who could do what Samson did. God wasn't finished using him yet. But he gave up on that woman in Gaza and fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek named Delilah. He got very attached to Delilah. And when the Philistines in the city found it out, they came to Delilah's house one day and said, "We will, each one of us here, will give you 1,100 pieces of silver if you will find out how this man gets his strength, so that we can do our voodoo curse or whatever it is and undo the source of his power." That's what they were after. They wanted to find out what kind of magical source he had for his power so they could work against him. And Delilah had to choose between thousands of pieces of silver or Samson. And since she was one of those women who did not love righteousness, peace, and joy with God, she chose the money. So on Samson's next visit, she's rubbing his head as he lay on the couch with her. And actually in her chamber, I think they were. And the Philistines were hiding under the bed. It says they were with her in the chamber. They were hiding either behind the curtain, behind the couch, under the bed, in the closet, ready to pounce. And she's rubbing his head. I want to tell you this because this is a pretty good indication of what happened. I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, I was riding down the highway. Don David was, Joel's age or smaller. No discussion of the Bible, no nothing. We must have read, he must have heard Samson being talked about in the meeting sometime before that. We're just riding along down the highway, coming from Charlotte up to Lexington. And all of a sudden he said, "Daddy, did Delilah say to Samson, 'Come on, honey brain'?" And I thought about that and I said, "Yeah, that's what she said. Come on, honey brain. Tell me your secret." I figure he might have heard that parable of the honey somewhere in there. You know. Knew it had something to do with his head. Verse 6, Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me, please." Oh, you can see that periscope sticking up. "Tell me, please, wherein thy great strength lieth. And tell me how I can tie you up and kill you." Sweetie. Honey brain. And Samson said, "Oh, if they tie me up with 7 new little cords that never dried, or green sticks, soft green sticks that were strings that were never dried, I'll be weak as another man." Up here on the shoulder, honey, up here on the shoulder. And she said, "Okay, honey brain." And she rubbed him to sleep and got 7 green whips and tied him up tight. And the Philistines jump out and grab him, and he burst out, and I wouldn't have wanted to be one of them. She just happened to have 7 of them lying around. So he leaves and comes back. You see in verse 9 it says, "There were men lying in wait, waiting, abiding with her in the chamber." And she said, "Oh, Samson, the Philistines! Oh, how'd they get in here?" Verse 10. Yes, like, "Oh no, honey brain, oh no." And Delilah said unto Samson the next time he came in verse 10, You mocked me. You lied. You told me lies. Now come on, honey brain. Tell me how I can tie you up. I want to tie you up." He was lying. Philistines hiding under the bed. He said, "If you tie me fast with new ropes..." I was just kidding before about the width, darling. Up a little higher on it. "Ropes, honey, it's ropes. Tie me with 7 ropes. But make sure they've never been used before." And Delilah got him to sleep. And happened to have 7 new ropes somewhere around there.
They've never been used.
And tied him up. And the Philistines spring out from under the bed and grab Samson. And Samson burst out of the ropes and they say, "Oh no." Out this one, and out that one. And Delilah's standing there and Samson looks at her and she says, "Oh, my hero. I'm so glad you're safe. Come in," and he rubbed those strong shoulders. So the next, she said, you are coming next Thursday, aren't you? You're going to be back. So the next time he comes back, he comes back. Delilah said to Samson, after she has him in the bedchamber there, with the Philistines under the bed. Everybody in the story is stupid. Every one of them. I tell you what it is. It's being overcome with the Spirit. It'll make you do stupid stuff. His lust is blinding him to what common sense would tell him. Delilah said to Samson, this whole time you've done nothing but mock me, told me lies. Now tell me how to tie you up. If you love me. He said to her, well, you see these 7 long locks I've got on my hair? Uh-oh. He said, you tie them to a weaver's beam. That's heavy equipment. Where you weave cloth. If you had it tied to that weaver's beam you've got beside your bed, honey, I'd just get weak all over. So she just rubbed his head and his back and his strong arms. And he finally fell asleep. And she took those 7 long, I mean, he's grown, he's never cut his hair, took them and he tied them, connected them to the weavers, to the weaving machine there, web. And then the Philistines crawl out the best they can. Out from under the bed. We got him this time. And Samson, wait, she said, oh, honey brain, they're here again, those awful Philistines. They must have followed you here again. And Samson wakes up, jerks his head up, and jerks the beam completely off the web. He's standing there, this weaver's beam hanging on, and the Philistine is, what is this wrong? Something's wrong here.
Like a heavy-duty curler.
He just... Sorry, I got to weave. He weaves. Probably has to lift the bar sideways to get out the door. And go home. They're all stupid. All of them. And Delilah was saying as he walked out the door, are you going to believe me or not? She said, well, and as he was walking away with the beam banging on his legs, she said, you're coming back Thursday, aren't you? And he does. This time she could not get the Philistines to hide under the bed. They just weren't there. They might not have been able to come back. But she gets them on the couch or the bed and she's rubbing. She said, I just don't understand it, honey. How you can say you love me and won't tell me your secret. I love you. That's why I want to tie you up. I want to give you to myself as a present. If I just had some ribbon. Now tell me, honest, honey brain, if you really love me. What verse is this? Verse 15.
She said, "How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You just made fun of me these three times. You hadn't told me where in your great strength lies."
And she kept it up. She kept it up. His soul was vexed unto death. Finally, in verse 17, one of those visits, he told her all his heart and said, "Look, there has never come a razor on my head. I've been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man." And then she just cooed him on to sleep. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come back just this one time, but I know he's told me everything now." Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees. And then she called for a man. He must have been under the bed with a razor. And she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head while he was there on her knees. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And then the Philistines came out, and she said, "Oh, honey brain, the Philistines be upon thee." And he woke out of his sleep and said, "I'll go out as other times before and just shake myself, get these fleas off of me." But this time, when they grabbed him, it was different. What do you think he felt when he realized his hair was gone? He felt like a fool. He felt like what he was. He felt as if he played the fool. And he found out, you let a weed grow in your garden long enough, it does away with the fruit. I don't know how the Philistines went about it, but the Assyrians, when they were going to put somebody's eyes out, they stuck a hook in their bottom lip, I think it was, with a string on it, and jerked their head up so they couldn't jerk it down, and then jab their eyes out like that. They put out Samson's two eyes and made him grind corn like an ox or a mule. That's what he did every day. And he learned a valuable lesson. But his hair began to grow. All part of God's plan. His hair began to grow. The Philistines never paid any attention to it. Every once in a while they bring Samson out with a rope for it to laugh at him. Who knows what they did? Maybe it said to make sport for them. Maybe they put little animals like dogs or something to nip at his legs and make him jump and run and put obstacles out there to see how many of them he'd run into blind. Who knows? It was some kind of cruelty. They used Samson for fun and games when he wasn't working, pushing the wheel around and around, hour after hour, to grind the wheat. And finally, his hair had grown out long again. And they brought him out and made sport that day and had thousands of the Philistines up in this huge building, second floor. Brought him down where the slaves were and made fun. I had a blast that day, getting drunk and praising Dagon, their god, for giving Samson to their hands. When Samson had finished being laughed at and ridiculed, they gave him a break to rest a little while. And he knew there was a little boy close by, and he asked him, "Where's the pillar that holds up this building? The two pillars hold that main section up. Let me rest against the pillars." And the little boy led him over to where the pillars were. And Samson begged God and said, "Let me die with the Philistine with all his strength." But it wasn't his strength that did this. God's anointing came on him one last time. And he pushed the pillars. The building collapsed and the whole thing fell in. And 3,000 Philistines died. He killed more when he died than the whole time he had been alive. Then his mother and father came, got his body, and took him home, buried him. Samson didn't know the law. God's men had not done their work. You can get under a spirit of gambling, spirit of lust, spirit of anger, Spirit of fear, spirit of unbelief, spirit of pride. If you don't get rid of it when it's small, it'll turn you into a bigger fool as he was in Delilah's lap. You won't be able to see what Delilah's doing to you. It just won't sink in. Weed your garden while you can. Don't let something grow up and choke out the Word of God in you. Jesus said it would happen. Jesus told a parable and he said, if you don't understand this parable, you can't understand any of them. Four kinds of soil. And the third kind of soil were the saints who didn't weed their garden. You're living in this life. You're going to have strange thoughts come by. Strange feelings come by. And all you got to do is hoe it. Just chop it up. Don't even let it grow. If you let them grow, Jesus said they would choke out the Word of God and make you unfruitful. And that's a pretty good example of it right there, how blind a wrong spirit can make you when it grows like that. Don't let a bad habit become what you're known for. Samson had a bad habit of attraction to Philistine women. Now we have already gone over 17 and 18. Chapter 19 tells the story of, gives us an example of how bad things had gotten in Israel as far as morality goes. There was a man, there was a Levite that came to Gibeah, just north of where Jerusalem is. He was traveling at night with his wife, concubine, whatever title fits. And it was getting dark, and his servant said, it's dark, let's stop at Jebus, which is later Jerusalem. He said, no, the Jebus, the Canaanites still live in that city. Remember, the Benjamites never did take that city, even though Judah conquered it for them. Canaanites were still there. He said, no, they're foreigners. They might not treat us right. Let's go on up till we find a city where Israelites live in. So he came to Gibeah, where Israelites lived, confident that there would be some welcome there. Now, there was a bad sign when he first got in the city, because hospitality is a sign of a righteous people. Lot showed hospitality to the two angels and escaped Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham showed hospitality to three angels and had a son the next year, Isaac. God blesses people for hospitality, but when he gets into this city, there's nobody to show him any hospitality, nobody to take him in. And an old man from the tribe of Ephraim in the north happened to be living there. And the old man said, what are you doing out here in the street? He said, well, nobody's offered me a place to stay. I'm not asking for anything. I've got plenty of food with me for my animals and the lad here and this woman. I just don't have anywhere to sleep. He said, no, you let me take care of all that. That was a good man living in a rotten place. He said, you let me take care of all your needs. You come on with me. Well, what happened to the two angels when they went to see Lot down in Sodom and Gomorrah? What did the men of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah want to do? They wanted to initiate them into their city. They came and demanded that Lot turn over those two angels. They didn't know they were angels. They just thought they were travelers. To them, so that they could initiate them into what that city represented. And let them be used by perverts all night. And now we see the same thing even in a city of God's own people. The men of Gibeah. It's a sin that God mentions hundreds and hundreds of years later. Come and demand that this old gentleman who had taken him in for safety, turn him over. What did the old man offer him? They tried to talk him out of it. Finally, they took the concubine, used her all night. And she came back, crawled back in the morning to the door. And when he told her, we have to leave, up. I told her, get up, we have to leave. She couldn't answer. She was so close to being dead, and she died. And he was so angry that he cut her body up into 12 pieces and sent a piece to every tribe. I said, now what's supposed to be done about this? Israel got together and decided that those men of Gibeah had to pay. So when they marched down to Gibeah, or marched down and demanded that the men of Gibeah turn themselves over for justice, the whole tribe of Benjamin went to war against Israel. And the result of that war, I think it's interesting that the first two battles they fought, Benjamin won. You know why Benjamin won? Because the rest of the tribes weren't righteous enough to win the victory in the name of the Lord. They were tainted too. They were worshiping other gods. They were doing some of the things that the Benjamites were doing. And every time they'd come back and cry and pray, God would say, go back. God was chastening them using Benjamin before he let the hammer fall on that little tribe. Well, they fought. And the tribe of Benjamin was just about completely wiped off the map. So much so that the tribes of Israel wept and said, oh man, there's going to be one whole tribe missing now. But there were 600 men left. And they said, with these 600 men have got to have wives so they can have children so the tribe of Benjamin won't be wiped out. But they had sworn an oath to God that none of the tribes of it, nobody that fought against Benjamin would give any of their daughters to anybody from Benjamin anymore. So they said, what are we going to do? And somebody suggested, well, who didn't come? Because whoever didn't come, that oath doesn't apply to them. And they found that city of Jabesh-Gilead over here, who had refused to come and avenge that poor Levite of his raped and murdered wife. So they went up there and took 400 of their daughters, had a battle up there, and they couldn't find but 400. That left 200 men of Benjamin without daughters, and they came up with a clever little scheme to get them their 200. And it worked fine. And I'm glad it did, because one of those 600 men was an ancestor of the Apostle Paul. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. So it's a good thing they didn't completely wipe out the tribe. Now that's Judges 20 and 21. In the last verse of the book of Judges, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was wrong. Every man did a wrong thing. And then you had the book of Ruth, which shows the beauty of a righteous man doing his duty according to the law of Moses. And because Boaz obeyed the law of Moses, we have David and Solomon and Asa and Jehoshaphat and King Josiah and eventually Jesus. I thought the book of Ruth was pretty simple, pretty easy to understand. Anybody have any questions about what we've read? Some wonderful lessons in there. If God will just let us take them in. What nation, Kathy Tuck, was Ruth from? She wasn't an Israelite. Where'd she come from? Let me give you a multiple choice. Was it Moab or Boston? Right. She was from Moab. You see how good God was to foreign people when their hearts wanted to do what was right? She became David's what? Great-grandmother? Was that it? God doesn't miss anything.